Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm Linda Formicelli, and welcome to our weekly Freelance Writers Den meeting. The Den is a learning and support community for writers looking to grow their earnings fast. Today's Den meeting is an Ask the Editors call, always popular. Our editors today are Amelia Harnish, Associate Editor of Health Magazine, and Linnea Floyd, Health Director of Family Circle. After each interview, we will spend a few minutes taking questions from listeners, which you can leave in the Q&A chat. If you're not there, head on over and say hello. Sometimes people like to chat among themselves about what we're talking about, and that's fine, too. We will also be taking the questions that people left in the Den. So, hi, Linnea. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for inviting me.
Sure. So let me tell everybody about you. Linnea is an award-winning journalist and dedicated editor with a passion for stories that change lives. She's appeared as a wellness expert on The Today Show, The Dr. Oz Show, NPR, and more. As a health director of Family Circle magazine, Floyd develops content to improve the well-being of its 18 million readers. She's also worked as an editor at a variety of prominent women's magazines, including Glamour, Essence, 17, Heart and Soul, and Parenting. Her stories have appeared in Cosmopolitan, Fitness, Money, and newspapers across the country while writing as an Associated Press reporter. Linnea also co-edited Essence's The Black Woman's Guide to Healthy Living, and she received her BA in English from Harvard University. Again, thanks for being here.
Thank you. This will be fun.
Yeah, it's always fun. Well, I was hoping that first you could tell us a little bit about Family Circle's mission and readers right now.
I would love to. So Family Circle is it's got a very unique perspective. There aren't a lot of competitors out there that are doing what we're doing. And what we're doing is focusing on moms of tweens and teens. So these are women who have school-age children, think between the ages of, say, 5 and 18 or so. And they have very different challenges in terms of parenting than moms of toddlers or moms of newborns. So we're really hitting in on that demographic within our magazine.
Okay, and that really is unusual because I know when people want to write articles for parents of tweens and teens, there aren't a whole lot of magazines they can really turn to.
That's right, and that unique perspective really works out very well for us. The other thing that is really great for us is because we are targeting that demographic and because we're talking to women in that demographic, they're not only in charge of their own health, but they're also in charge of their whole family's health. Essentially. So when we present them with information around health, it's not just women's health, but it's also concerns that moms of tweens and teens might have in terms of health. So think, you know, the HPV vaccine or sexting or something like that. And it's also concerns that mom might have about her husband's health or men's health. So we really run the entire gamut because this woman that we are focusing on is the head of, essentially the CEO, if you will, of her household. And she puts her family first. Just like we say on the magazine cover, and so we're helping her do that. But we're also reminding her to take good care of herself.
Okay, and I can't remember if you mentioned this. Did you mention what age range the women are in that you tend to?
So that also runs the gamut, and what I found is that our readership online tends to skew a little younger than our readership in the magazine, but it really runs the entire gamut. So we'll do stories, you know, we'll do those kind of 20s, 30s, 40s, and beyond stories within the magazine because there is such a wide range.
Right. Okay. And I just want to stop and say you can start leaving your questions if you want in the chat. And just somebody go in there and say you can hear us. So one time I went 20 minutes and like nobody could hear us.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Here, let me see. Anyone hear us? Let's hold on for just one second.
Yeah, let's see.
Okay. Thank you, Delisa. Thank you very much. I hate to have to break in like that, but I just wanted to make sure.
That's very important.
Yes, that we can be heard. So we actually got this question on the Den, and I already had this question ready for you, and I think people will be super interested to know how many pitches you get in a week, and out of those, how many are accepted?
So my inbox does run over, I do have to admit. It's mostly, though, from PR agencies. I do get pitches, but I would only say that I probably get a dozen or more, like maybe 12 to 15 a week. And unfortunately, not a lot of them are accepted. I don't think that anybody's going to be surprised to hear that. But I think what people may be surprised to hear is that I am always looking for great pitches, so don't feel like you don't have a chance just because that number sounded high to you, perhaps, or the number of pitches accepted sounded low to you, perhaps. I am always looking for that diamond in the rough, so put your idea out there.
Awesome. And you know what? I know this isn't on the list of questions, but is email okay, yeah, or do you guys like snail mail pitches, which some of the magazines seem to be wanting?
So I definitely prefer email pitches over snail mail pitches and over someone even calling and saying, hey, would you be interested in a story about this? So I would say for my interest, and I'm hard-pressed to think of any editor friends out there that I have that would like to have to open up a piece of mail in order to get to the goods, I would definitely say email is the best way to go.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I always tell people, but there are one or two guidelines out there right now that are saying snail mail. So I'm like,
wow,
I don't know, should you ignore that?
That's very surprising.
Yeah. So, but also,
but
I know we usually have some, I know, tell me about it. But we do have some men on the line usually, and I'm wondering if men ever write for Family Circle and if they're welcome.
Men definitely write for Family Circle, and I think that one of the big misconceptions out there is that you have to be the same gender or look like the person on the cover of the magazine, or be the same age as the person that the magazine is talking to in order to write for the magazine. And I definitely don't think that that's true. That's not true for me, and I don't think that that's true for other places. The most important thing for you to remember is to speak in the voice of the magazine, and I think we all know that magazines each have their distinctive voices to them, turns of phrases that you would see, for example, in a Glamour that you wouldn't necessarily see in Family Circle, or you wouldn't necessarily see in Men's Health or something like that. So I think that the thing to focus in on is not, you know, do I look like the target reader or, you know, or something like that, but to think about, you know, can I speak in the voice of this magazine, and can I have something to offer to the target reader of this magazine? So that's something that I would focus on much more.
Okay. And, you know, off the top of your head, can you think of any style pointers for what makes Family Circle sound different from the other women's magazines?
I think that we have, you know, you're talking to someone who is a mom of a tween or a teen, so they obviously have a lot of life experience. It's, you know, I want to say that they're a mature woman, but I don't mean it in the sense that, you know, she's necessarily in her 50s or her 60s or something like that. And, you know, she's an educated reader, and she's searching for, you know, a certain type of voice, you know, someone who gets her and someone who's going to give her information that she can actually take with her and use. That's what I would, you know, I always tell people that we're here to entertain our readers, you know, not, you know, circus entertainment, but entertain in the sense that we're giving them, you know, information about difficult topics and we want to draw them in. Then we're here to educate them. We have to give them the information that they need to make their lives better. And then we also want to inspire them, because we don't want someone to close the magazine and then move on with their lives and not do the things that we're suggesting that they do to improve their lives. So it's a threefold task, and the trick is really just getting in there and doing all of those things so that we can get the desired outcome of improving her life.
Right, and I think, you know, a couple things that reminds me of that I'm always telling new writers is, one, read the magazine. You know, you'll get the style from there. And two is, it's all about the service. A lot of people want to write an idea of what I call it, isn't this interesting idea, where there isn't anything that the reader can take home. And I think, especially for Family Circle, those two things are super important.
Yes. So I'll start with the second thing that you said. Well, I'll start with the first, because that's a little faster to get to. But yes, definitely read the magazine. I mean, I still, if I want to pitch something to a magazine, will go to the library, look at the last three issues, because sometimes, you know, they're not on newsstands or what have you, and do my homework and see, you know, what does this magazine sound like? What types of stories have they already covered? What are they interested in? And I know that that's extra work and that's extra time, but it can also save you time on the back end so that you don't end up sounding differently than they would like or pitching something that they have just done. Then the second part of that is, and I totally, and I guess I should have started out by saying this, but I would never recommend to you or your listeners anything that I haven't done myself, and I've certainly spent years freelancing as well. So the other thing that you really want to make sure of is that this isn't just an idea that you are excited about, but there's no bottom line to it. And I've definitely been in situations where I find this amazing health fact and think, people have to know about this, but at the same time, people want something that they can do about this. So you have to be able to give them some kind of service, or it could be, you know, even outside the realm of health, because I understand that there are probably people on your call who are interested in writing more general interest stories as well. You know, there has to be some takeaway from whatever trend you are telling people about or whatever amazing first-person narrative you've been able to uncover. There has to be a takeaway for the reader so that when they close that magazine, they have improved. They haven't just read something interesting, but they figured out how to improve their lives from this.
Okay, thank you for that. And you mentioned first-person narrative, and that makes me think, do you do reported essays?
We do. We do. That, I think, is a really great – I'm glad that you asked that because I think it's a really great way for new writers to break into magazines. When people, when you have something that you have personally experienced and then you're adding on the added layer of service, that can be a much easier way to break in because you have the personal connection, you have this history, you have the passion, which will come through in your writing, and then you layer on the service element. So, for example, there was a woman who cold pitched me a story last year about hair loss. She was in her late 40s or early 50s, and she was distraught from losing her hair. And her pitch letter was really great. It started out with her being in the bathroom brushing her teeth, and she asks her husband, you know, do you think I'm losing my hair? And without skipping a beat, he says yes. And then he realized that he answered too quickly. And
oh my God,
she
yeah,
was really upset. And the story is about her personal journey, going to different doctors, trying out different treatments, trying to improve her situation, and ultimately what she decided and what didn't work for her. So that's really a great way for a new writer to get in because now I have your personal journey, which is was very moving, and which a lot of women in our demographic will be, of all ages actually, but particularly in our demographic, will be able to relate to hair and women. Come on. And then also we were able to layer in service through there. So
yeah.
Talking about the specific types of doctors that she went to and why did she see those individuals, talking about what it's like to go for a consultation at some of these, places that advertise in, on the web and on television for being able to boost your boost the number of strands of hair that you had. So we could layer on, who does this happen to? We had a sidebar about hair loss in children. Really just tackling it from the family circle perspective, but also being able to take this personal journey and weave in service.
Okay, great. And you pitch those. You pitch reported essays. You don't write the whole thing and send them in. Like a regular
essay. No.
Okay. Great. And then I was looking at your website, and it's really extensive, and I was wondering, is the content different from the print? And about pitching, how you would pitch one versus the other or how to choose?
The content is really similar to the magazine. We do repurpose content from the magazine, but we also do have original content as well. The tricky thing there is that we usually a lot of that content out to editors and freelance writers that we've worked with, that we have relationships with, basically. So in terms of opportunities for freelance writers, it's mostly what you would see on our Momster blog, and that is not necessarily, most of the people who do that, to be completely honest with you, do that for free and do that for the promotion and for the clicks, and, we put people's bios at the end of their stories and their websites and hot links and all of that great stuff. Is not the same for every magazine, so I do know that there are books out there that do assign out pieces for our website. We tend not to do that. The focus really for me is assigning out for the magazine. And I did see that somebody asked about how much assigning out I do. All of the features that I publish in the health section are assigned out. I mean, occasionally you'll flip through and you'll occasionally see something that I wrote or something that our associate editor wrote. But for them, I would say 95%, 90% of the features that appear in the health section are assigned out. The only thing that isn't assigned out would be some of the columns, like our wellness news bites, or we have recurring columnists like Dr. Janet and Rosalyn Wiseman. That's assigned out to those specific individuals.
Right. And are most of the articles that you do see that are assigned out based on query letters or that you actually come up with in-house and then assign to writers that you know? Or
the majority of them are concepts that have been generated here, either by myself or maybe someone else here has an idea that they pass along to me. And again, please don't be discouraged by that. My job is to sit here all, you know, at this desk and to hopefully have my finger on the pulse of what's going on in the world of health. Mm-hmm. As it pertains to our reader, and I have PR people pitching me ideas. I'm sitting down with experts and doing desk sides. I'm going to events. So that's going to happen. However, I do, you know, as I mentioned with that hair story, I'm working on a story right now for our November issue that was pitched. I went to an ASJA pitch slam, and I think she was actually the first woman who got up to the microphone and said,
wow.
Hey, it was another first-person narrative that we wove through with service, but she was essentially talking about something, a health issue that had come up in her family, and we turned that into a really great story for our November issue, shot her and her family. It worked out really nicely. So the surprise pitches do happen. Once I develop a relationship with a writer, and they've gone through this process and, you know, get even stronger and more familiar with the magazine, pitching becomes easier. And so there are some writers who I know if they send me an idea, it's probably, you know, a home run, because I've been working with them for so long.
So what happens when a new writer wants to approach you? How can they make their query stand out?
So the three tips that I would offer for that are, one, make the subject line make it cover line worthy, basically. You know, don't say, you know, here's a, you know, freelance pitch or something like that. Give me something that you would actually see on a cover of a magazine that would make somebody at, you know, Walmart or Pathmark or whatever have you pick up the magazine and open it up, because that just sounds so alluring, because that makes me excited and it makes me want to open up that email. The second thing that I would say is get to the point really quickly. And again, I know how it is. I've absolutely written pitches that have, you know, a paragraph of flowery language and, you know, details, and you don't really get to the meat of what you're pitching me for a long time. Unfortunately, my inbox runneth over. So I want to be able to, if I don't get it from the subject line, I want to be able to open up your email and boom, 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 in like the first three sentences, get whether or not this is something that's going to be interesting for our readers. So get to the point quickly. And then I would just say, and this is what we've been kind of talking about already, is know the magazine that you're pitching and really show it. So really make sure that this pitch isn't something that you could cut and paste and send to five other editors at five other women's magazines. It's something that actually is tailored to and specific to the Family Circle reader.
Great. Thanks for that advice. And you know what? Everybody, Linnea has to leave at exactly 3:30, so I'm going to keep an eye on the time, but I was wondering if we can get to some of the questions. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
I was trying to keep an eye open as we were chit-chatting.
Yeah, I've been copying and pasting them into the script. So Charlotte has a question about FOB pieces and if you could be asked to be considered for them if the editor turns down your query.
If I could be – wait, I'm sorry. I didn't see that one pop up. If I could be – just could you just repeat it? If she turns – go ahead, sorry.
So she says, how do you tactfully ask to be considered for FOB pieces if an editor turns down your query? Is that possible?
Oh, okay. So she queried someone. They said no thanks. you could just, that's fine if they say no thanks. It's great that they responded to you. I have to admit that I often get really backlogged with freelance pitches and can be tardy at times returning messages. So it's great. That's great that she wrote back to you. And I would, she or he, pardon me. And I would just say that you could just write back and say, thanks so much. I'd really love to be considered for front of book pieces. Here are some ideas. Right, because anybody can email an editor and say, hey, you know, I'd like to write some front of book stories. So email some ideas. But again, or not necessarily again, the only thing that I would stress is to do your homework and make sure that they actually do assign out front of book pieces as opposed to having their junior editorial staff write those in-house so that you don't end up wasting your time researching things that they're never going to assign out to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But the great, you know, I would say that she has a really great idea there in starting small, because I definitely know that when I was starting out, I thought, oh, I'm going to get someone to assign me a 2,000-word story. Here we go. And really, if they don't know you and haven't worked with you in the past and aren't sure what you're going to produce, smaller is better. And as I mentioned before, you know, something that comes from a first-person perspective can really help you get your foot in the door.
Well, great. Well, you know, that brings up Paula's question, which is, aside from FOB articles, what other sections are most open to freelancers?
Well, it depends on the magazine, to be quite honest with you. But for me, I would say, it's kind of different. For me, I would say taking the first-person slant or pitching ideas that could work as a one-pager. A lot of the times, book size can go up for a magazine, and they're looking for, instead of adding an entire article to an issue, they're looking for a one-pager or a two-pager or something like that to fill out the book. And if you pitch something that's, you know, by one-pager, I mean something that would be, say, 500 words. So it's bigger than a small item, but it's much smaller than a feature story. So I would try doing something like that.
Okay, thank you. And Paula wants to know, do you need to write a fully fleshed out query, or is it okay to send sort of an introductory letter with maybe, you know, 3 or 4 ideas, one paragraph each, and they can write the pitch if you're interested?
That's a great question. That's actually funny because someone just did that to me today. And I have to be honest with you, it makes the process longer, I think, because what I ended up doing was writing, but they pitched me 3 kind of paragraph-long ideas, and one was absolutely not right. The other was probably better for someone else within the magazine, and the third was interesting, but I really couldn't tell if I would assign this person, you know, a 1,500-word story off of 4, you know, 4 sentences. So, I don't know if people can hear us, but I'll keep going. So what I would say is, if you have, you know, one idea that you are really excited about, please do go for that and do a fully fleshed out query. And if not, know that editors will still read your pitch, but there will be more back and forth. And if they're backlogged, it'll take them a little longer to get back to you, as opposed to them having all the information, having to wait around for them to then say, hey, I need more information about this, is going to take a little longer. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, okay. Definitely. Yeah. And Delia wants to know, or I think Linda wants to know this. She wants to have a website, but she has no clips and was wondering what else she can put on her website. And I think really pertinent
That's
to you
question.
Is if a writer has no clips, what can they put in their query letter to show you they can do the job?
That's a really great question. So what I would do if I were Linda is I would still write. You could post blog posts. I don't mean just throw anything up there, but really spend the amount of time crafting something that you would if you were crafting something for a magazine. Obviously you have to do it a little faster because it should be timely. But I would definitely put something up there so that they have a sense, whoever you're pitching has a sense of what your writing style is like. And then the second thing that I would say is really try to You know, it's great to aim high for the big magazines, but there's nothing wrong with getting some great clips from newspapers, for some from some small local magazines in your area. From, you know, a lot of people don't think about writing for airplane magazines. I've heard that that can be really lucrative. So really cast a wide net so that you can build up those clips as you're waiting to get to these bigger magazines. Build up the smaller clips so that you will have things to post up there. And don't be afraid to write for websites also and link to those on your website, other websites, and then link to it on your personal site.
Right, right. Great advice, because, I mean, it's the catch-22 with the clips, you know what I mean?
Yes. And I, sorry, I just saw a question come up from Sue R., and my personal, if there were one thing that I could tell aspiring writers right now in terms of the web, is please buy your, if even if you don't fully develop your website just yet, please buy your domain name before someone else does, and then work on getting your website out there, because that's another step that, first of all, it's the easiest way for people to find you and find more information about you at any hour of the day. And I have had people pitch me where I didn't want to have the back and forth of, you know, emailing, can you send me some clips, and you, you know, give me more details about X, Y, and Z. If I can just go to your website and download some clips or print out some clips, that makes things so much easier. So, you know, even if you're not ready to make that big step of designing a website, and you'd be surprised how quickly you can pull something together on WordPress.
Yeah.
I would highly recommend that people at least purchase their domain name so they have it, so that when they're ready, it's there for them. Same thing for Twitter.
Yeah, good advice. And Sue also wants to know how many articles you buy per month and what your lead time is.
It absolutely varies. Both of those, sorry, our lead time, because we are because of the type of magazine that we are, because it's not, you know, Time or Newsweek, is actually pretty far in advance, because we can plan stories pretty far in advance because we know what's coming seasonally. So right now, for example, I am looking for people to pitch me ideas for January 2015 and February 2015.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the case with all magazines, so you definitely should, you know, if you have a relationship with an editor, if you have an idea, I think it would be safe to say 3 to 6 months for any magazine, and definitely for ours. The second question was, sorry, was lead time, and oh, it depends on how many articles, depends on the issue. You'll notice that some issues are thicker than others, so it just, and that can be very seasonal. Everyone's September issue is really big, so there tend to be more freelance articles in that than there might be in, for example, a January issue. January issues tend to be smaller in magazines. So the number of freelance articles assigned out really can fluctuate anywhere from 1 to 4 per month.
Okay, great. And let's do one final question. We have a couple minutes left, if that's okay.
Yeah.
And Dilia, I'm going to ask your question of Amelia, so I will ask after the next interview. But is there a mistake you see in pitches that will always cause you to lose interest?
Is there a mistake that I see that will always cause me to lose interest?
In queries, yeah.
I will say this. I would just always double check your emails before you send them out. I've definitely gotten emails where someone remembered to swap in my name for another editor's name, but they forgot to change the magazine name. I have seen little mistakes like that that made it really obvious that either someone else already passed on this, or you're simultaneously submitting this to a bunch of places, which is not a good thing to do, or something to that effect. So that can be a bit of a turnoff. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know what? Thank you so much for being here. I know you have to go in like
Thanks
1 minute,
for inviting
so
me.
I will let you go. But thank you so much. That was really interesting, and I think everybody got a lot out of it.
I hope so. And can I make a little tiny plug for myself?
Yes, of course.
I am teaching a Media Bistro class this fall. It starts at the end of September on writing for women's magazines. So if anyone is interested in signing up, they can go to the website and check it out.
That is so cool. Good luck with it.
Yeah,
thank
it'll
you.
It'll be great. It'll be great. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Bye.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Bye. So, everybody, we have Amelia Harnish coming up next, but I just want to make a quick announcement. If you're joining us late, this call is brought to you by the Freelance Writers Den. Den members enjoy a wealth of benefits, including access to the junk-free job board, free writer website reviews, weekly live events, supportive forums, and access to all of Carol Tice's past e-courses and live event recordings, including this one, as well as the four-week boot camps, which are $197 to non-members. And some of you, I think, will be excited to know that the next boot camp is in September, and it's on self-publishing. So, Amelia, are you there?
Yes. Hi, everyone.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, of course.
So let me tell everybody a little bit about you. Amelia Harnish is the associate editor at Health Magazine, where she does everything from reporting and writing the FOB pages to assigning features. Previously, she spent 3 years at Ladies Home Journal as an assistant editor. She's a graduate of the University of Florida and a committed cat lady. I can understand that. And she lives in Brooklyn. So thanks again for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Sure.
I hope I am
and
going to be helpful to everyone.
Oh, I'm sure you will. And everybody, feel free to go on there and ask your questions, and I will, like, get to them after we speak. But First, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about Health Magazine's mission and readership.
Sure. Okay, so Health Magazine, as the name implies, is basically a magazine about health and fitness for women in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. So we are actually, I think, a standout in the marketplace, if only because we are one of the only fitness-focused magazines that focus on a little bit of an older readership.
Yeah.
And so we're not, we're a little bit more mature than maybe a fitness or a women's health or even shape. And so most of our readers already have kids. But we also, we don't really cover parenting. We really focus on health, wellness, happiness for women in their 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Okay. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, that's pretty much it.
Okay. I was going to say it sounds like the women are in an age bracket where their kids will be grown, so they're not really interested in the parenting magazine, in the parenting topic so much anymore.
Well, they're not so much, yeah, they're not interested in, you know, parenting tips, like, in the health of the children. I mean, I'm sure they are, but they can get that from somewhere else. What we try to focus on is health and happiness for mom. And we kind of, but they are women who, let's say, like, we wouldn't cover, like, pregnancy tips, or we'll talk about birth control, but not from the point of view of, like, these are women who have already had their children. Maybe they still have young children, but they've already had their kids.
Right.
Yeah, which is, it's subtle, but it's an important distinction.
Okay, that's important. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So the question everybody wants to know is, how many freelance pitches you receive in a week and how many of those are accepted?
Okay, so I really don't get that many freelance pitches.
Wow.
The thing, and so please pitch me, the thing that I get a lot of is PR pitches, and I would absolutely 100% love to see more pitches from freelance writers. Now, that said, how many of those are accepted? I would say even if I got more, we would still have a very low acceptance rate, if only because we do have a stable of writers that we go to regularly. And also, like so many magazines, we have fewer pages than ever before. So, and a smaller budget. So it is hard. We still assign out a lot of things. I would say probably at least half the magazine. But every single page is, you have to fight for it. So I would say that the acceptance rate would still be low, but I would love to hear more pitches from writers. That's the bottom line.
You know, it's funny because Linnea from Family Circle said she doesn't receive that many, and I'm wondering why it is, because I thought with the internet people were going to be banging the pitches off left and right and you'd be overloaded. Why do you think that is?
I'm not sure. I think I'm not sure if it's that, you know, freelance writers have tried us multiple times and then they give up on us. I'm surprised that Linnea doesn't get that many. I thought that maybe it was because I've only been at Health for about 6 months now, so I thought maybe it was that freelance writers just hadn't found my name yet. But I also think it's very hard. It is hard to get in at a place like Health or even Family Circle.
And not because the editors don't want to take a chance on new writers. I just think that we are still figuring out what we want because our jobs are changing so much that it's difficult. But I'm not really sure why.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, I also wanted to know what are the best sections for breaking into health? For example, should newer writers start off with the really short pieces for FOBs, or is there another section that's more accepting of newer writers?
Yeah, so our front of book section is called Best Life Now, and that is what I mainly work on, and I'm actually writing a lot of it now. So if you have an idea for, I would say that definitely the FOB is a place that you could pitch me. I'd say if you have an idea for, a small item on, our Be Informed page, which is like health news, yes, we will take stuff like that. I think, but they're very short. They're like 100 words.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be a quick, easy takeaway there, which can be hard to figure out right away. You kind of have to really study the front of book to see what kinds of things we do. But yes, that's possible. But I would say actually that if you came to me with like a really good idea for what we call the health opener, which is the opener to the health section of the magazine, it's called Live Healthy, that's like a very smartly packaged but still timely idea, I'd say that's really the best way because those stories are hard for us to come up with. And I think I mean, this is kind of like another question that you're probably going to ask, but I think what I'm looking for really in a writer is someone who can bring me a fresh idea on a topic that maybe has been covered to death, but is still in our wheelhouse and we still want to cover. Like, if you can come up with a fun, interesting story about the menstrual cycle or about exercise, then that's packaged in a smart way, then I think that that's the best way to break in because that's how you can get attention, I think.
That's funny because I wrote several years ago for Health an article called Period Problems, and it was kind of like a fact on things that people have these problems, but they don't know where to look for answers. And, it's the same topic that people hear a lot, but a different way of doing it.
Yeah, I mean, we would do a story like that, we have to cover periods. It's just what we do. So,
yes.
So exactly what you're saying, if you can come up with a way to cover that in a fresh new way to show your creativity, then we'll be like, whoa, yes. We'll take that,
So you also mentioned these really short FOBs, the front of the book articles or pieces. Would you pitch those or would you just write the whole thing up since they're so short?
Well, I mean, yeah, basically you would be writing the whole thing up because they're so short. I mean, we would still go through editing and you don't necessarily have to do the reporting all the way. You don't necessarily have to talk to the researcher and have your quotes all down, but basically, your pitch would be the piece in the end with maybe like some extra reporting in there.
And you mentioned reporting and editing, and that made me think of a question. I think sometimes new writers are shocked when they write for one of these big magazines and they get to the editing process. And I was wondering if there are any words you can share to help them understand what is coming up and how they can deal with it.
Yeah, well, I would say don't take it personally. I am a junior editor, technically, and what I do, I often write and get edited, so I know how that feels, and it makes you feel like, oh, my God, I don't know what this woman wants from me, and I don't understand why she wants so many edits. But I would just say that, A, don't take it personally, and just understand that your editor, whoever you're working with, has an editor. So often I'm working with a writer, and I'm sure they're like, oh, she thinks I'm crazy, but I'm just trying to please the person that's above me. So, and so it's very hierarchical, and it ends up working because, you read the magazine, and you're like, oh, that's great. But yes, it's definitely, when I was in college, one of my professors told me that once you say you want to work at a magazine and then once you get there, you realize it's kind of like a sausage factory where you're like, oh, my God, I can't believe how much goes into this one page or this one little piece.
Yeah.
And just if you come in with that expectation, like every time I write something, I know my editor is going to tear it apart or have lots of questions. And that's fine. That's what happens. That's what the editor is there for. So I think that helps.
Okay, and I think a lot of especially newer writers don't know or understand how much reporting goes into these pieces.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't just have to be a good writer, but you have to be a really good interviewer and researcher and know how to document everything. I mean, can you say a little bit about how that is for health?
Yeah, so, I mean, even these smaller FOB pieces, for example, that I work on, you know, these are still really complicated, complex scientific studies. And since I write them, also, I have an interesting perspective on that because, I mean, that's what I'm working on right now, actually, is getting in touch with people and talking to each researcher. And, yes, eventually it's going to be 100 words, but I will spend, you know, 20, 25 minutes on the phone with someone. I'll have a transcript or just my interview notes that are sometimes 500 to 800 words, and it's all about finding that one quote that explains everything. And also knowing the difference between something you can quote and something you should explain yourself. So, yeah, definitely. And then keeping track of all of that. I have to, you know, we back up every single fact in the magazine. The research process is like I have to have the study, every study, you know, backup for every quote, backup for every fact. So keeping track of all that stuff, and my favorite thing in the world is when I do, like, a bigger piece with a writer and I'm like, okay, I need your backup, and they don't send me, like, one file or very organized bunches of files that has everything in there, and it's very clear, and then the researcher doesn't have to bother me about it. They can just do what they're there to do and work with the writer to make sure that everything's correct. And, yeah, I think that is actually a specific thing to magazines. I know that a lot of online outlets maybe don't fact check as well as a print magazine would, and even newspapers. It's very different. I've had former newspaper writers, when I've asked them for backup, be like, what are you talking about? You don't believe me? Like, get really offended about it. And it's just something that we do. So that's another thing to be aware of and just be ready for.
Yeah, you know, I've written books, and even books don't have that kind of rigorous backup and
fact-checking
and all of that. I mean, it's only the magazines, which is good.
Yeah, and I'm not sure exactly. I guess magazines are just more likely to be sued or something. I don't know. But overall, I think I wish more readers knew that, because I wish that they knew that, no, we checked this. This is fact, you know?
Yes, this is research-based.
Yeah.
So I saw that you also have an extensive website and was wondering if the online content is different from the print, and if so, can writers pitch both of those separately? Or?
Yeah, so I tried to get that info for you. I checked with the web team. So we do have a separate web team with a separate editor-in-chief and two very smart senior editors, and they do have a stable of freelance writers that they work with every once in a while. And we are working on sort of combining the print and edit and online stuff so that we're working together more, which is very exciting for us. And definitely sometimes there have been times in the past when I did get a freelance pitch and was like, you know, this is really better for the website, and have forwarded it to them. Now, I don't think in that particular time, I don't think anything came of it because maybe it just wasn't right. It is different. The stuff that the web wants is different than what we want and need.
Mm-hmm.
For us, I think the thing is that we want stuff that's like this. I mean, our lead time is 3 months. So, you know, the web, they're doing stuff every day to day, versus us, we're like, we have to cover stuff that's still going to be relevant and interesting in 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, very different. But I would suggest thinking about that. If you have a story that you want in the magazine that you know is packaged in a way that is more evergreen or is a big enough deal to matter in 3 months, then yes, definitely pitch me or another editor here. But if it's more of like a quick hit daily story, then I would send that to the website.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a question on everybody's minds is, do you have to have some sort of a professional or educational health background in order to write for a health magazine?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't have like an MPH or anything. I think it does. I mean, if a writer comes to me and they say, I've written for fitness and women's health and shape and all of these websites that cover health news, yeah, that's going to be helpful because immediately I'm going to think, oh, okay, well, you know what the deal is then. But I think really the strength of the idea is what matters. You know, if you've never written for a health publication but you have other journalism clips, then I don't think that that hurts you or at all in any way. I just think as long as you're a good enough reporter and you can get the facts right and you can, you know, listen to the expert and write it in a way that is not only just like this is what the source says, but is also like this is how I'm going to make this complex topic clear to your lay readers, then I think that's perfectly fine.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned having a strong idea, and I was wondering where your writers and editors typically find story ideas, because a lot of writers say, you know, it's so hard to find breaking health information that's still going to be relevant in 3 to 6 months, and we're wondering where they find this stuff.
Okay, so, well, that's, I mean, we are definitely on top of the daily news, and like I keep mentioning this, the Best Life Now section, but for example, those are studies that, you know, I'm pulling from Science Daily and Medical News Today and all of these PR medical sciencey sites. And like, let's say that it's a study that, so here's an example. So there was a while ago a big study that got everyone talking about Tylenol during pregnancy, increasing the risk of ADHD in your kids, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody was so worried about it, and it was a big story the day it came out. And we wanted to cover it, and the way we covered it so that it was 3 months later still relevant was we covered it like, okay, you may have heard this on the news, but here is why you don't really have to worry about this. Because, and then we sort of had the researcher explain what the results actually mean. Like, what it really showed was like there was a relative risk, but your absolute risk is real. We didn't explain it in these terms, but basically we calmed things down. So that was a way of angling it in a way that made it relevant 3 months later. But otherwise, sometimes we just find stuff that, you know, sometimes the FDA, like recently we did something in Best Life Now, the FDA approved these new allergy treatments. And so, yes, everyone was already talking about them. So then we covered it, pros and cons. You know, pros and cons.
Right.
Things. So it's a lot about the angle, I think. But definitely
yes.
We just look at the news wires and, okay, this looks like something we would cover, and we all just pitch that way.
It sounds like you're taking things, you know, the studies, which are interesting studies, mm-hmm. but then adding the service to them, which is kind of timeless.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what we're doing. We're getting to the point about, like, well, how does this actually affect me, and what can I do about this? That's a huge point that I think is important for writers to understand is if it's just like science that's interesting for the sake of being interesting, we won't cover it because I'm sure it may be interesting, but if it doesn't affect our reader and like choices that she can make in her day-to-day life, then it's not really for us.
Right. That brings up another question I get a lot, because a lot of people want to cover these sort of obscure diseases or new studies that don't affect a lot of people. What percentage of your readership needs to be affected by something in order for it to be worth an article for you, if that makes sense?
Well, okay, so as Health Magazine, our readers are interested in health and fitness. They have a higher health IQ than, like, maybe someone who reads, you know, like a Red Book or, you know, another like more general women's magazine. They are the type of woman that is like, you know, drinking green juice and going to yoga, that kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, we're going after healthy women in their 30s and 40s, and we're trying to keep them informed and, you know, and trying to, with everything that they read, we want it to affect them directly. So for it to be, I think for us, it's very hard for us to cover, to answer your questions, it's very hard to cover a specific condition. So I do get pitched a lot by both PR people and by freelance writers sometimes about a specific condition that is important for women to be aware of. But unless it's something like breast cancer or cervical cancer and your risks and what you can do about it, then it really has to affect a wide variety of women. Something like heart disease, yeah, we would definitely cover that.
Mm-hmm.
But And in some of our other activities, we will cover disease-specific, like the website, for example, they cover a lot of disease-specific things. So that's another way we're different. But for us, yes, it definitely has to affect a very wide swath of the population.
Awesome. All right. Thank you. And I was wondering if it would be okay with you if we get to some of the questions that have come up in the chat and I can read them to you.
Sure.
All right. Great. Thank you. So Delia wants to know, once you work with a new freelancer for the first time, assuming you like their work, does it become easier for that writer to get further assignments?
Yes, definitely. Once we've worked with you and we're like, and it went well and, you know, you were easy to work with and the copy came in, you know, acceptable, then certainly. If you want to pitch us more ideas, I think it is easier.
And would a writer that you've worked with before need to keep doing these fully fleshed out pitches, or can they start sending more casual or shorter ideas for you now that you kind of know them?
Yeah, shorter, yes. Shorter ideas. I think shorter ideas are always better for us. For us, it's like we want to know firsthand. What we'll do, the way our process works is we'll do a pitch that maybe isn't very long, and we'll talk about it in a meeting or something, decide, yeah, let's do that, and then we'll assign basically an outline, which is the more fleshed out pitch, which is the more like, this is what we're going to cover, which I think is like actually very kind to writers. And previously I've worked at other magazines where it wasn't like that. But I think, so yes, so once we've worked with you, I think for your first pitch, yes, you need to really explain to us what you want to write about and what your idea is, because we also need to get a sense of your writing. But after that, yes, you can send us, you know, sometimes a link and just like an offshoot of an idea and just what you're thinking, and then we'll talk about it amongst ourselves, and I'll get back to you and say, okay, so this is what we want to do, and maybe it's a different idea, but it's the same kind of thing. I do that with my writers a lot, where it's like we know you're onto something, but we're going to help you focus it to exactly what we want before you even do
it.
So.
Okay. And I know it's probably frustrating to everybody, but it seems like every magazine and every editor has their own way they like doing it, because Linnea at Family Circle just said she prefers the longer queries, but my Redbook editor and you are talking about the shorter queries, and I think you just have to get to know somebody and what they like.
Yeah, I mean, it really differs. I totally agree. I think I really like that about working here at Health, is like, for us, I think my top editors are more willing to take a chance on, you know, a less fleshed out pitch. I mean, it might get to the outline phase and we say, we need to kill this, or we need to change this totally. And that does happen, which is also frustrating. But I think that we are good at taking a chance on an idea, but it has to be something that catches your eye in some way, ultimately. So I think it's the strength of idea that matters.
Okay. And Charmaine has a really good question. How long before you write an article on an evergreen topic, like the periods we were talking about, would you consider another with a new angle? So how often do these evergreens come up?
Mm-hmm. Well, what is also challenging in terms of Health Magazine is we cover only health topics, the whole book of health topics every month. So a lot of magazines will have like, oh, we covered period problems, a big feature on that. I mean, I think we mention periods at least once an issue in some way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so for a feature, for us to repeat it, I would say at least a year or even 2 years, depending on the topic. I think for really evergreen topics, like a period, probably once a year we need to do a period feature. And every year, you know, we want to find the thing that's new about it. And every year we will do an allergies feature. But we might not do like a how to improve your memory feature every year. We'd probably do that every couple years.
Right. Okay. And Little wants to know about editorial calendars, whether you have one, and if it can help writers figure out ideas for you, because they'll know what's coming up in each issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say don't really depend on those. I don't have an editorial calendar, and in my experience, editorial calendars are really more for the ad sales team, where we give them sort of an idea of what we're thinking for each issue, and they use that to sort of give advertisers a heads up about what we're maybe going to do. But it's always so vague that that I don't think they're very helpful to writers. I think if you have a good timely idea, like I know that that's not very, that doesn't explain much. But for example, like,
no, it's good advice.
Yeah, I think for, you know, if something's in the air in the health space, like one of the stories that that we did before I got here, which I really loved and I would love to duplicate, is we did this food safety story on, like, is that food truck safe? So it was about, and it was a quick two-pager, but it was a great story because food trucks were really popular and at the time, and they still kind of are. And it was just like all the things that happen in a food truck that maybe you need to worry about, and how to tell, like, when you look in the window or whatever, if they're, like, cleaning their hands and stuff appropriately.
Right, right.
And that's so our reader. They're the reader that is, like, obsessed about germs and worried about it. So something like that, that would never be on an editorial calendar, but it was such a good story, and it was freelance written. And I'm
You'll
sure.
Be for it, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing that we'd be like, yes, definitely. Let's run that. Let's get on that.
Okay, cool. And one writer wants to know if you personally take pitches for other sections besides the FOB, or are there other editors for the other sections?
Yeah, so I do the FOB, but I also assign features in the Live Healthy section, and sometimes in the Eat section, which is just our food and nutrition. But we do have a separate editor for fitness. Anything fitness related, I will pass along to our editor, our fitness editor. Mm-hmm. We also have a beauty editor, a food editor that does more of the, like, recipes and food advice, whereas I cover more, like, nutrition and dieting. and then I also will assign well features, but so there's another editor who does sort of general features here as well.
Okay. All right. And Charmaine has a really good question. Do your experts and sources need to be American?
No. Mm-mm. They don't need to be American. If there's a – sometimes it depends on exactly what we're talking about. If we're talking about, like, a behavioral issue, like psychology or, you know, like eating habits or something, then we'd want a source of study that used an American population, because that's who our readers are. But if it's more of like a health thing, that's like more of like a human body thing, then I've worked with researchers in Korea before. And those people are sometimes harder to get in touch with, but it's fine.
All right. And let's do one final question. Cindy wants to know, when submitting a query by email, can you link to your blog and website, or do you need to add clips to your query?
I think it's helpful to just send me a link to the website. I think not just like your website. It depends on how many clips. If you have 5 clips on your website and these are your clips that you show to everyone, then that's fine. But I think if you have a lot of clips on your website, you should give me links to each one. So links are fine, but, you know, send me 2 or 3 that, you know, you really want me to look at, so I don't have to just go through all of your clips. But attachments are fine as well. It doesn't matter.
Okay. Right onto the query letter, or do you need to request them first and then they send them attached?
I think it's good to, if you're going to, I think you can just wait until I ask you if you're not going to send me a link, just to keep my email from shutting down. But sorry, I'm getting over a little bit of a cold, so I have a cough. But yeah, you can wait until I ask you if you don't have a website.
All right, great. Well, you know, we're at the top of the hour, so I want to thank you very much for being here. That was really, really interesting.
Well, I hope it was helpful.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
So, everyone, that was awesome. Thank you to both of our guests for taking the time to share their expertise with us. coming up next week, we're doing a den call on how to work as a freelance social media management consultant. I will be doing that call. Our guests are Ashley Cooksley and Kate Gardner. I hope everyone will be there. Thank you so much for being there and all of your awesome questions. That was very helpful and enlightening, and I really appreciated it. So until next time, bye, everyone.